Two Sugars, brought to you by Delacro Communication. Delacro.co.nz.
Shine bright like a diamond. Shine bright like a diamond. We're like diamonds in the sky. You're a shooting star I see, a vision of ecstasy. When you hold me, I'm alive. We're like diamonds in the sky. I knew that we'd become one right away. Oh, right away. At first sight I felt the energy of sunrise.
It's such a great song, Rihanna, Shine Like a Diamond, just like us women do. We shine like a diamond. And if you remember last week, I told you that someone shone like a diamond with me, and that's our Two Sugars sister, Cara. And I said I'd invite her back. Here she is. Cara, welcome back.
Thanks, Mariska. Hello. It's so lovely to be back. Gosh, yeah. It's been a while, actually. Come to think of it.
It is so good to have.
Obviously.
And it's been such a long time, and you've been down there in Oamaru and you're still down there.
Yep.
But as I was talking about last week, that didn't stop you from supporting me in my journey. And so it doesn't matter where you are, does it, where we can support each other?
That's so true. That's so true. And I should say congratulations, doctor.
And I was famous for a day.
Yes, well, that's going to come back around, I reckon. It's so interesting, isn't it, what people pick up on and what they notice about other people and about other stories too. And, you know, I was so proud of you for just sticking it to this entire journey, right, like between COVID and travelling back and forth and everything else that you have going on in your life. It would have been an easy thing to drop a few times, you know, and you didn't. And you stuck it through, and the body of learning that you've delivered for people is really important stuff. So how do you feel about it now, one day famous?
And for our listeners out there, if you did not know about my One Day Famous, last Wednesday when the show went out, but we also had an interview on Mike Hoskins. We were in the Herald and stuff. I spoke to an Aussie journalist. So, yeah, it was a little bit of fun and excitement for a day.
Yeah.
But how did I stick it out? And I think this is really important. It is those people around you. It really is. And you know, as I mentioned last week, Cara, you were different types of support to me. And I remember it was starting off with at Brainstorming Buddy. You remember brainstormed through that questionnaire and we took that. But then you were there just when I needed you for, I don't know, you were just there. I mean, right till the end to the exam. And I think that's how people stick it out, because it's the people around you actually that help you stick it out.
Oh, interesting, because I've got that fabulous photo of you clanging the bell, the PhD bell, and you just lit up, right? Like, I mean, of course it's wicked fun. You've got a giant mallet in your hand and there's an enormous bell in front of you and you get to hit it. I mean, that's pretty cool just to start with. But, you know, it was such a day, and it was such a challenge knowing that you were going into this kind of scrutiny and, you know, having been kind of prepped ahead of time that not everybody was in agreement around your work, and some of the stuff that had been, you know, part of the critique isn't stuff that you necessarily agreed with or wanted. So how did you manage to go from that sense of I'm being a little misjudged here into the actual professionalism of defending your work and managed to keep it together? Because I was there, I saw you. You kept it together.
Oh, yeah, doesn't that look good on a face? Is I know.
Yeah.
Everybody out there probably thinks that they're thinking inside it ain't together, but by the gosh. And I did allude this last week to everybody that, you know, I kept peeking at your face every so often. And when there was a smile there, and I was just thinking, gosh, imagine if Cara like poked out her tongue and did it, you know. How would I keep it together then? That's a big question, isn't it? I mean, how do you keep it together when you know what you have done, other people don't agree? And I think that's absolutely okay that other people don't agree and they have their own perspective. And maybe, and this is a real difficult thing to do, you have to put that emotion aside, I think. And I think by the time I'd spoken with you and I'd had a big cry on your shoulder about it, and I think maybe that's what you need to do. You need to get it out of your system. But also use it, you know, as motivation for, you know, the messages that you're wanting to get across as well. But I really do, you know, again, when you've got that support person where you know you can just turn to them, you can trust them for just being there and listening and not judging you, to have that moan and that whinge and, get it out.
Because it's interesting, I remember a few times thinking I need to keep my own face pretty poker, because some of those questions coming at you, I was thinking, excuse me, have you even read what you wrote? You know, or hey, lady, you've worn out that particular point of view already two or three times now. Move on, please, just move on. And thinking, I don't want to throw you off your stride by having my grumpy face sitting across the room. So that was an interesting experience in and of itself, kind of trying to telepathically figure out what was going to be most useful, or at least least problematic, when all the stress was on you and all the tension, you know, that was there. It's a big deal.
And this is just for our listeners out there, in that oral exam, Cara was not allowed to sit at the table with me. Yet we are allowed to take in as many support people as we like, yet she wasn't to sit at the table with me. And this kind of threw me a little bit as well. And I thought, well, what's the support person there for then, if they're not kind of sitting there holding your hand? I just thought that was the most oddest little thing. Now, the facilitator or convener, whatever they call them, and great credit to him, said, look, well, if you really you want to, I don't mind, you can do, but protocol is that you don't. And that was most odd.
The whole dynamic, in a way, was slightly odd, wasn't it? Because there was you on one side of the room, me on the opposite side of the room, convener between us facing you, and then your three examiners sort of gathered around that table, essentially with their backs to me. So if I wasn't in the room, it would have been a circle, but there was me on the other side. But also, you had the most direct line of sight to my face.
Yes, and that was the biggest help.
But it could have been that, like, if I'd stuck my tongue out, you would have been stuffed, mate.
Now maybe there's a method in that madness, actually, to where you, but you picked that seat, I think. Or was
we'd arrived before the other, examiners had. So it seemed logical at the time. But I think there's probably a whole PhD, you know, just going in that whole how to be seated at such a thing, and where is the optimum position and the least optimum position, and, you know, all of that. Because you're juggling tech as well, right? So it's not just trying to make eye contact with the people. You've got people on screen, you've got tech that you're trying, slideshow that you're presenting, and then the floor opens and anyone can ask you anything. Well, obviously not the support person. That was very clear. I was not to make a sound, which was absolutely right and proper. But it's still, you know, your head is literally moving in different directions as you're fielding questions and trying to deal cross-check, cross-person, cross-space. Did you feel that was fluid? What was it like on the inside for that?
As you know, that's interesting, actually, because what annoyed me the most, because as I've helped people kind of do online learning, and letting them know you actually have to look into the camera. You can't look at the person on the screen, and everybody goes, oh, I thought I should look at the person on the screen. And so what annoyed me is that I couldn't really connect with them because the camera was in the most oddest of places. It was like underneath the screen.
It was.
So then I couldn't see them and I couldn't see their reaction to what. And I think I had to get myself over that to think, hey, you've either got to look at them and notice their nonverbal reaction to what you're saying, or you look at them on the screen, or actually connect with them through the camera, which then I wouldn't be able to see. So that was actually a little bit of a challenge. And then you're right, then you're kind of turning to the person in the room when they ask the question. So then you feel you're not including the people on the screen. So yeah, quite an interesting dynamic, isn't it? But I'm sure nowadays that's the norm for probably most people, having some of their examiners in the room and some on screen. And it's, how do you set that? Yeah. You almost need one of those like 360 cameras, don't you? So that it doesn't matter where you're looking, the camera's picking you up.
Yeah. Hmm. Although, I mean, you know, and you know this, we run some meeting rooms down here in Oamaru, and we haven't found perfect tech yet. You know, even in this day and age, we've still got cables and wires. Not everything is Bluetooth because it doesn't always work well. It's not always compatible with everybody's, you know, computer. So we're still a little bit of IT help desk, you know, in that space. And it throws people. You know, we have regular examinations come down here and they bring the examining company brings the laptops and so on. They set everything up for the young people. They still have glitches from time to time. Mm. And yet, you know, I guess in this day and age, we've grown up in a world where if you flunked your exam, that was it. First, you know, that was the final result. And as time's moved on, there's a lot of mitigating factors now in the grades you might get or so on. But certainly while we were in that room that day, I didn't feel like anyone's giving you any mitigating anything with all the swivel. But I thought you handled yourself so beautifully. And, I'm really proud of you. I think it was an incredible challenge, and what you did is absolutely worthy of being a doctor. And
That's really cool.
It's a big title and you've deserved it 100%.
Yeah, cool. Thank you. That's kind of really heartwarming. But as you know, listeners out there, as you're listening to us, you imagine the support that you need, and you find that person that's willing to do that, someone to sit in there and sweat on your behalf, you know. And she's, I'm sure Cara was sitting there going, why the heck does she say that? That doesn't even make sense.
No, I don't think even once.
But I mean, isn't that what friends are for, you know, where you can just call on someone and say, hey, I need you. I need you right at this moment. And you're the person I need. Because I think we do. We need people at different times for different things, don't we?
100%. And that's it. I mean, that whole kind of oral defence, you're on the show. You haven't got a script. It would be different from if it was a comedy club open mic night, for example, right? You choose different people who will, I guess, have some sense of comfort in the space that you're about to ask them to stand. But more importantly, you kind of, I suppose, weigh up what the risks of it all going wrong is, and sort of hope that that who you've picked isn't going to upset the apple cart too much. But, you know, that's the thing, I think, is when you can look across an awkward room and make eye contact with somebody who you know has your back, you know, who you know is up there being brave and doing something that is profoundly, you know, admirable, it kind of overrides everything else a little bit.
I think so. And, you know, I'm one of those people in the audience anytime because I know how, you know, sometimes how difficult it is, and I always try to be that face because I'm always supporting whoever it is up there, whether I agree with them or not. And I always just try to be that face that when they look round, there's somebody just with a little smile on their face, nodding or, you know, giving them that encouragement. Doesn't it make a difference when you see that person in the crowd, when, you know, whatever it is that you're presenting, that you just see that one person and it just gives you that kickstart, I think. Yeah.
It's so interesting that you say that because I Look, I did undergraduate degree a couple of years back in a particular topic that I really wanted to see inside the engine room, and it was great. But we would, COVID-ish sort of era, there's a lot of online team meetings. And at one point, I got put into a breakout room on Zoom with a woman who told me that my constant nodding of my head was a distraction and an irritation, and essentially that I was an attention seeker.
Oh.
And it was pretty, that was pretty full on. And I was sitting there thinking, exactly what you just said. I always try and be the person who's looking engaged and nods when I genuinely agree, because it's hard to be talking to a room full of of people who are impassive, or even worse, like we were in the Zooms, is talking to screens half on, someone's chin on a phone, somebody's hat on their shoulder, you know, who was actually listening. So I found that a really confronting thing. And it really made me self-conscious for quite a little time with being in Zooms, that every time I nodded my head or smiled or something and saw myself move, I was like, don't move, I'm driving this woman crazy. she's in the Zoom. I don't want to be that person.
Isn't that interesting? And I wonder if you were sitting exactly in the same room with that person face to face, whether it would have not actually been a problem. Wow.
Yeah.
Quite interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Really interesting. So, I mean, it took me a while. I've obviously, you can tell, I've moved back to nodding and smiling, doing all the things that come naturally. But, yeah, that one really, I really had to kind of do a little bit of reflection around, you know, what was going on that for me, and was her, I think, blunt accusation kind of more about her or more about me. And I think the truth is always somewhere in the middle. You know, my desire to be comforting means also needing to be seen, to be nodding and so on. So there's an element of truth in what she was saying, but not in the way that she was perceiving it. So, yeah.
Gosh, I think that's fascinating, because none of us probably were really taught to present on Zoom. It just suddenly was all kind of put, I mean, yes, it was there for ages, video conferencing thing, but bang, when COVID came, we were all on Zoom. And you're right, the times I would turn my video off because I thought, oh my God, I look awful, or, you know, I'm doing this and whatever else. But really, I suppose none of us really had any training about how to be, you know, yeah, that's actually quite interesting into whether you are sitting with a screen of a whole lot of faces and one person's nodding away and moving a lot, that's a distraction.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. 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 It was such an interesting time for learning how different people communicate, right? Like, I can remember sitting in a meeting and somebody saying, sorry, I've only got this 1 hour to eat my lunch, so I'm just going to turn my camera off while I do that, and thinking, well, that makes sense, you know, but at the same time, a bunch of other cameras went off, and thinking, is that the protocol? Is that what we're doing? Can you sip a cup of tea in front of a meeting? We were being stuck at one, I think it was with the council or something, and it was like, I don't know, 7:15 at night. I was over it. Alex comes sneaking around the door, sees my teacup, pours wine in it where no one can see, and I'm sitting there drinking my wine and my teacup thinking, oh God, I hope this meeting stops soon. You know, we saw all this stuff about the guy standing up with his boxers on and, you know. But there certainly, I think, as time's developed, there is protocols on stuff. And I always like it when somebody's up front and just says, you know, at the beginning, can you please keep the cameras on? Mm. You know, it's difficult for people to talk to a wall of black screens.
It was funny, actually, when you say that. I remember that we had a lecturer's meeting. So the school I lecture at, we had this meeting online. It was during COVID, and we were all moaning about how the students didn't put their cameras on.
Mm.
And I had my camera on, and one other person did, and there was probably about 25 of us in the meeting. And I put in the chat box, I said, who doesn't like it when the students don't have their cameras on? And then a few people came back and realised what I was saying. And I'm saying, you're doing exactly the same thing. And, you know, Yeah, I think it's the most worst thing in a meeting to sit there or in a training session to sit there and talk to a whole lot of black dots, you know? It ain't fun.
No, and then we get into that whole cultural thing, right? Like I did the Treaty of Waitangi workshop down in Otago Polytech, 2-day program. And one of the things up front was no eating or drinking in the workroom. Like we had a separate space to do that. And I thought, okay, yep, that's totally acceptable. But then when you're catching up with people on a Zoom call, right, like understanding the protocol that you don't eat or drink where you work, totally, but not everybody knows that and not everyone has the same kind of, I suppose, alignment with it. So, you know, you can be sitting there in a meeting and somebody's chucking, you know, forking their food into their face and you're looking at the horror on someone else's face while they do it and thinking, yeah, but we don't do that. We wouldn't do that in a physical meeting. That's what I find really interesting is that, you know, we have a lot, we see a lot of meetings come and go in this building, but as a typical rule, unless everybody is eating, nobody is eating. Unless everybody is drinking, nobody is drinking. So that kind of virtual shifts some of those norms, I think, a little bit out of the way.
Yeah, I mean, I must say, I'll drink a cup of tea, but I won't eat because I've seen it very early on. I saw it, someone eat, and I thought, oh my God, I don't want to see right down your gob.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And actually, but I mean, imagine my shock with one guy in this university course smoking while talking to the group. And I was thinking, I have not seen that since last century, you know, yeah, when we did it on planes and movie theatres.
And again, you can't do that in the room.
No.
Wow, isn't that? Yeah. Wow, yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, that's really, it'd be great for our listeners. You guys comment on our Facebook page. What have you seen in the Zoom room that's you kind of go, huh? Or what are those bad habits that you've picked up because you're in a Zoom room?
Yes, true. Yeah. Yeah. Because those norms shift, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I must say I am guilty of turning my camera off every so often if I am starving and eating, you know, something. Mm. And I'll take a few quick bites and, you know, then put my camera back on. But that's an interesting thing as well, because if you are expecting people to jump in at lunchtime, that is their lunch hour, you know. So they do have to eat. So then are you making your own bed by going, well, we're going to have a lunchtime meeting and people, you know, turning their cameras off.
So, yeah.
But, you know, I think someone has to make a screen. This cannot be too hard in this day and age and all the technology. Someone has to make a screen that follows your eyes, you know, that the camera follows your eyes to wherever you're looking at the screen. So even though you're looking at the person, it looks like you're looking at them as well. It can't be that hard, surely, than rather than
right.
a camera. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like we see these presenters on the telly all the time, but exactly as you say, they're actually taught how to interact with a camera. I mean, I can see it now, even with my blurry glasses on, I'm looking at the picture of you, not the camera, because if I talk to the camera, I feel like I'm talking to myself.
Yep.
Whereas, you know, which is actually the opposite from your experience, right? Like if I look at the camera, you feel like I'm talking to you, but when I look at the screen, I look like I'm talking to myself. So... and I suppose it's also about human nature. Like today I noticed somebody wearing a really beautiful brooch and I said, oh, I love your brooch. And I tapped the opposite shoulder because she was opposite me.
Right.
And she had it on because that's the, I suppose it's that, that's the empathetic way of signaling, right? Like where on my body is the same on your body. But actually for most people, I think it's mirroring would have been smarter if I tapped the other shoulder. Then, you know, but she got it straight away. So it, we're just not built the same way exactly. You know?
Yeah.
Our left and rights and stuff move.
There you go. And I think we'll leave it at that because we've gabbled on for our half hour here and we're not built the same way. I think we'll leave it right at that. Great to have you back, Cara. And hopefully we'll see you back in a few weeks or so and you can tell us all about what's happening down in Oamaru. For everybody else, that's it. We'll see you the same time, same place next week.
Bye.